I always, like most kids, I always liked music, pop music and all the rest of it, but it wasn't until I heard blues via, I must say, through, you know, people like the Rolling Stones and all that kind of thing, that I really started to become obsessive about it and wanting to play it and wanting to collect blues records and used to subscribe to Blues Unlimited magazine and became quite, probably to all my friends, a complete bore about it all. You know, but there was something about that music which... you know, a 13-year-old schoolboy from Canvey on in Essex just fell in love with it. I don't know what it was. I just liked it.
Who were they? Who were you actually listening to then after the Rolling Stones?
Well, a real hodgepodge. I mean, I didn't have any kind of... Some people specialise in Chicago or Mississippi, the Delta or whatever. I liked all of it. But, I mean, some specific people would have been... Obviously, Muddy Waters and John Lee Hooker were both big influences. And the Howlin' Wolf, when I saw him perform live in Romford, I think I was about 14 or 15, and that really did seal it for me. I thought, that is what I want to do. What that big black man up on that stage is doing, that enormous guy with a harmonica and just controlling, you know, 1,000 punters in this sweaty room at the back of a pub, that was the most exciting thing. And that was a real inspiration.
You've painted that a bit rosy. I mean, did he really draw 1,000 people in a pub in Romford?
It's a big old pub, big old room, and perhaps I'm... Yeah, I might be exaggerating, but it seemed like 1,000 to me at the time.
Did you sort of pick up a harmonica because of Howlin' Wolf, or...?
Yeah, I think so. Although, at that time, about this time, we had a jug band, which played with our original bass player, Sparko, John Sparks. At that point, was playing 12-string guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Fenwick, who was playing jug, but very wisely took up managerial duties.
Has he been looking after you ever since?
He has, yes.
Amazing.
Yes. And various other people who drifted in and out of the band.
Were you still at school, or was this...
Yeah, this was a schoolboy thing. Yeah, this was weekends and youth clubs, and but quite lucrative, actually. I remember we used to play at the Canvey Club and busk outside the Monaco and another pub called the Haystack and a pub called the Oyster Fleet, which I'll talk about later on because we've now bought that pub. And we won a talent competition at our local holiday camp, and it was real good fun. And then the day turned out that we decided we wanted to go to electric and start having amplifiers and everything, and the jug band kind of drifted back into bit, and it became more of a rock and roll band.
Right. Was there a moment when you thought, oh, this is great, this is me for the rest of my life?
Yeah, well, I think this was partly to do with the fact when I saw the Wolf. You know, I thought, yes. Well, I don't want to sing Tiger Rag anymore, or, you know, Won't You Come Home, Bill Bailey, that sort of thing that we've been doing down the pub with washboards and everything,
yes.
Which was great fun in its own way. But no, I wanted to start singing serious blues, you know. It came, that was the way it had to go.
But was there a moment when you actually thought you could make a living from it?
That, not until much later.
Yes.
No, not until much later. It was always essentially a hobby. I mean, we used to... say, wouldn't it be great? I was a solicitor's clerk and Sparko was a bricklayer. And we said, wouldn't it be great to chuck all this in and actually earn a living just by playing music, wouldn't it? But it was a pipe dream.
Where do you then play?
Well, then we realised that if we were going to be a commercial viability as a band, we'd have to play some rock and roll as well as some blues.
Yeah.
So we also incorporated into our repertoire, you know, loads of sort of Chuck Berry stuff as well to keep the punters happy. And also, I love it too and I love playing it.
Right.
I loved rock and roll as much as I loved blues, really. To me, the two things were different sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
So started playing in pubs and clubs and roller skating rinks in Southend and a dodgy pub called the Railway in Pitsy, otherwise known as the Flying Bottle, and, you know, all the usual kind of like rough houses and places where musicians go. And then, of course, Wilco Johnson came on the scene. And he was a couple of years our senior. And had been away to India on the trek, you know, and everything. And
he was a hippie. He was an ex-hippie.
Well, yeah, kind of, yeah. And he'd been to university and had a degree and everything. And was we all greatly admired him and looked up to him as, you know, he'd been around a little bit. And absolutely delighted when he agreed, condescended, you know, to join our little band. You know, and his influence in the band was considerable because, A, he was a songwriter. And, B, because he got us away from being a purist blues band and introduced us to... or reintroduce us to sort of Johnny Kidd and the Pirates and that idea of a three-piece lineup, no, unencumbered by piano or rhythm guitar, just very, very stripped to the bone.
Yes.
Which we kind of emulated, or tried to anyway, and it ended up sounding like Dr. Feelgood.